here. I really enjoyed talking with you, Annie, and I really appreciate the work that you and Oregon Shores is doing to protect and conserve and restore our estuaries. So before we wrap up, is there anything we missed? Anything you want to make sure gets included?
No, I thank you so much for your time. I would guess I would just say you can learn more about us and support our work, donate, volunteer, sign up for our newsletter, all that good stuff at OregonShores.org.
Well, great. Annie Merrill, thank you so much for joining me on Coast Range Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy talking to you.
And that's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. You can find links and resources to everything we discussed today in the episode description of the podcast or at our website, coastrange.org. We would love it if you would leave the show a rating and review on whatever podcast app you use. If you want to get in touch, my email is michael@coastrange.org. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple weeks.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and touchstone events of your life, of your journey. Join us first and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here on KBOO 90.7 FM and available online at kboo.fm. Consuelo is my name, and I will be glad to hear from you and reminisce about your journey. Once Upon a Time, live in the air room here at KBOO 90.7 FM. Share with us your memories, experience, and journey of your life. First and third Friday of the month from 11 to noon here at KBOO 90.7 FM.
This is Cesar Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout-out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we get started, I want to let you all know that KBOO has been on the air for 55 years, making us one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the longest-standing media institutions in Portland. And we've been able to remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community because of support from amazing people like you. In fact, 80% of the station's funding comes from the generosity of our members. So if you can, please help us continue to serve the wonderful community by donating today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. So now on to the topic we're going to be discussing today. As most of you have no doubt heard, among the myriad horrifying decisions handed down by the Supreme Court earlier this month, the court announced rulings that will effectively demolish decades of precedent on workers' rights and undermined the agencies tasked with enforcing labor law. These rulings further underscored the Roberts Court's anti-union agenda. Under Chief Justice John Roberts, the Supreme Court has been extremely pro-corporate. One study even called the Roberts Court the most pro-corporate court in history. Not only have many justices been groomed and vetted by the business-backed Federalist Society, but Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito have taken lavish favors from billionaire corporate titans, and, you know, favors and also trips and all kinds of, you know, other types of gifts.
Yeah, and I think, too, you know, just going back to reference the study you're talking about, I kind of want to call out, too, like, calling Roberts even pro-business, I guess, in my opinion, wouldn't be far enough because, you know, we've talked so much on the show that actually a balance between ownership and employer actually is good for business.
Yeah.
So really, it's not even, I wouldn't even call it pro-business. It's pro-capitalist. It's pro-ownership. It's pro-market, these sorts of things, right? Because I think calling it pro-business is even, to some degree, lightening what's actually happening.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because, like, you can be pro-business and still also pro-worker.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a difference between just the, like, commerce and then being in favor of those who control the means of production and own all the capital.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's a great point. Like, the Roberts Court is very much just pro-capitalist and pro, like, billionaire, essentially. You know, and, like, Clarence Thomas has even spoken at two Koch Network fundraisers and, you know, their donor summits and, you know, different gatherings of right-wing, ultra-wealthy business barons. And so it's like, it's really those people that they are very much in support of. It's the barons, you know, the titans of industry and the capitalists, really. And, you know, while it's no secret that the court is decidedly, you know, pro-corporate, pro-capitalist, pro-1%, most Americans probably don't know just how anti-worker and anti-union the court really is. One of the most egregious examples was a 2014 ruling with an opinion written by Justice Thomas, which held that Amazon didn't have to pay workers for their time while they were forced to wait in metal detector lines for up to 25 minutes after their shifts had ended, just to ensure that they weren't stealing anything. And I think that's actually a topic that we've covered on this show before, but just the idea that you clock out, and then before you're able to leave the building, you're trapped in this building, you have to wait in a line, you know, that's longer than most airport security lines just to get out, and during that time, you were not paid. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically time you're captured there, not being paid, and the Supreme Court, the Roberts Court, ruled that that's perfectly legal for the company to force you to stay without paying you. So that's just one example. And, you know, as a more recent example, look no further than the Starbucks v. McKinney decision from earlier this month, from the litany of things they, you know, rulings they handed down a few weeks ago, wherein SCOTUS overturned a lower court's approval of the National Labor Relations Board, or the NLRB's, injunction requiring that Starbucks rehire 7 fired workers at a location in Memphis, Tennessee. And we actually did talk about this, you know, they were referred to as the Memphis 7.
Yeah.
But in that case, just as a refresher, in that case, Starbucks fired 5 of the 6 baristas who were heading an effort to unionize that store. And Starbucks claimed that the firings were due to the workers, you know, the workers that had invited a camera crew into the store after hours, like after it was closed for the day. But the workers argued that they were terminated because of their unionizing efforts. And after the NLRB officials found that the workers had been fired unlawfully for backing the union, the board filed a complaint stating Starbucks discouraged union organizing and sought an injunction to reinstate the workers. A federal judge then agreed to the NLRB's request and issued an injunction to quickly reinstate them.
Mm-hmm. And really, it's super important for the NLRB to be able to win kind of reinstatement cases like this after companies fire workers for unionizing, because otherwise, then basically other companies can see that the laws that we have in place are very toothless and they're not going to affect them. And that's where, you know, it kind of comes back to something we talked a lot about on the show, where the executive branch, meaning the president, isn't just about doing all of the things that they do at like a foreign policy and higher level. It's setting the tone and tenor of basically placing people into positions that are actually going to follow through on things like this.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, if people see that people are fired and not reinstated, it essentially kills all unionization efforts because nobody's going to then go ahead and do that, especially if they don't have the means to, you know, go through a strike or get fired, right? They're just going to kind of sit and hunker down.
Yeah, like for a union like the Starbucks Workers United, they're a relatively new union. Mm-hmm. They are not necessarily, you know, they don't have the coffers and the strike funds there. So they're really the only hope that workers who are looking and seeing their coworkers being fired and still trying to pursue unionizing efforts, the only hope they have is that the regulators, that they have teeth, that they can actually enforce the law and reinstate the workers.
Yeah. Well, and that's what makes this stuff so crazy too around unionization is because this stuff is codified in law.
Yeah.
But yet then the courts, there's different ways that it can be upheld. And so it can be really disappointing.
Yeah. Like it's one thing to have it be a written law that can be interpreted. It's another thing to enforce it.
Yeah.
And it really does kind of depend on the regular, you know, the people who are put in charge of those, you know, regulating bodies and then also the will, the political will to make it happen. And so, you know, it is great that the NLRB, you know, under the Biden administration, as well as the federal judge, both realized that these workers had been fired illegally and demanded that they be reinstated.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, then the Supreme Court just overturned that ruling. And, you know, writing the court's majority opinion to overturn the lower court's approval, Justice Thomas, again, ignored all of that and said that federal judges, when issuing such injunctions, should follow a more exacting four-part test rather than the worker-friendly two-part test that the NLRB favors and that they've been using for decades now. So Thomas's opinion also ignored some glaring facts, notably that the union has accused Starbucks of firing 150 pro-union baristas and that the NLRB has accused Starbucks of an astounding 436 violations of the law in its effort to block unionization. And we've, you know, we've covered the struggle of the union, the Starbucks workers for a while now on this show, but it is pretty egregious how blatant the company has been in their just like direct union busting tactics, and for the court to just push all that aside and side with the Starbucks Corporation really just shows its hand and again highlights that they are just fully captured by the billionaire class, essentially. So, you know, in response to that, Starbucks Workers United president Lynn Fox criticized the ruling as undermining workers' protections, saying, quote, "Working people have so few tools to protect and defend themselves when their employers break the law. That makes today's ruling by the Supreme Court particularly egregious. It underscores how the economy is rigged against working people all the way up to the Supreme Court," end quote. Now, despite the setback, Fox emphasized that the decision would not stop the union's organizing efforts.
Mm-hmm. And the Starbucks Workers United has established almost 450 union stores to date and filed an additional 20 petitions to join the union just a week before that ruling was handed down.
Yeah, so they are, they are not backing down, which is great. But, you know, surprisingly, for this specific instance, the decision had an unusual alignment of justices, with eight backing the majority opinion and only Justice Jackson dissenting on just a few certain details, not even on the overall concept of it. So, you know, normally it would break down on like a 6-3 basis, you know, with the more conservative justices supporting the business and, you know, the more liberal ones supporting the workers. But this one was across the board. It was basically a unanimous, despite, you know, a few objections from Justice Jackson, unanimous decision to overturn the injunction and to support the Starbucks Corporation over the Starbucks workers. But nevertheless, the case has highlighted how important a role that a reinvigorated NLRB plays in the fight to protect workers' rights. And the NLRB had been largely an ineffectual tool of, you know, regulation under previous administrations, but, you know, under the Obama administration and then again now under the Biden administration, it really has been given more teeth and, you know, reinvigorated in a way that has kind of been unprecedented in our lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another set of SCOTUS rulings handed down this month that are set to devastate labor protections are the Loper Bright Enterprises v. Raimundo and the Relentless Inc. v. Department of Commerce decisions. Now, these rulings overturned the 1984 Chevron v. National Resource Defense Council decision, which established the Chevron Doctrine, which is something that you likely heard about once these rulings were handed down. You know, it's something that was talked about a lot. It's, you know, specifically that is around sort of environmental regulations, but it also applies to labor things, and we'll get into that in a second here. But this doctrine previously required courts to defer to federal agencies' reasonable interpretation of statutes. And, you know, this decision opens the door for federal courts to overturn NLRB rulings, which means workers can expect more legal challenges from the business world.
Yeah, the same goes for other federal agencies that make decisions impacting the workforce, including the Equal Opportunity or Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, the Department of Labor, and the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA.
Yeah. And so, you know, critics, of course, argue the ruling weakens worker protections and federal agency authority. And in a statement following the ruling, the Economic Policy Institute's Director of Policy, Celine McNichols, said, quote, "This ruling will make it harder for federal agencies to govern, operate, or enforce workers' rights and protections effectively, meaning workers will be left to exposed to more dangers, risks, and discriminatory practices on the job. Regulations are critical tools for establishing worker protections, and it is simply common sense that agencies that the Congress authorizes to administer and enforce laws should have the ability to establish those rules that most effectively effectuate those laws," end quote. And under the Biden administration, federal agencies have issued blockbuster rules on issues like union elections, worker classifications, protections for pregnant workers, and overtime pay. Every such move is currently being contested via lawsuit, of course. So, unsurprisingly, corporate attorneys are already expressing optimism over the expected challenges that will come from this new ruling. In fact, an organization we've talked about a lot on this show, Littler Mendelsohn, which is the law firm working on Starbucks' massive union-busting campaign, released an analysis of the decisions that read, quote, "The NLRB, EEOC, DOL, and OSHA already face challenges to major rules. Those rules could prove harder to defend under the court's recent decisions. And in the long term, these agencies will have to rethink their policymaking strategies." So that's pretty scary. And one very recent example of how this new decision might undermine worker protections, excuse me, is in relation to the first ever federal workplace standard to protect workers from the heat, from extreme heat, that was just established by the Biden administration. You know, an average of 34 workers die of extreme heat every year, and that number is almost certain to grow larger as climate change, we see the further impacts of climate change. And so this is a historic move that is expected to reduce the chances of illness and death for more than 36 million people in this country. But corporate lobbyists have been trying to thwart this effort for decades, and the Chevron ruling that was just handed down really, you know, gives them further ammo to do so. The court could simply rule that OSHA has no authority to issue a heat standard or rewrite new rules on subjective grounds. You know, as former federal safety official Jordan Barab, I believe I'm saying that right, wrote on his blog, quote, "The bottom line is that we're dealing with rogue MAGA courts that seem to have no respect for precedent or workers' rights. And until we have further clarification from the courts when cases are challenged, we won't know for sure what will be happening," mm-hmm. end quote.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically centralizing power with themselves. And so we're going to, you know, I think the other thing to call out too is, you know, we already have an overburdened court system. And so if all of this stuff is just being centralized into saying, okay, well, you know, this is just going to appeal every single time up to the Supreme Court until we get the ruling that we want.
Right.
You know, this is just, it's not a recipe for effective law.
No. It is really like, it is a recipe for whatever the political inclination of the court is being what is going to be the law.
Yeah,
that time.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to your sentence, right? Like, you know, OSHA has no authority to issue a heat standard or rewrite new rules. I mean, that's, I'm not sure what we want the government to do if its agencies can't govern the things that they're basically being tasked with governing, right? And that's the whole point is, you know, it isn't an open-ended thing, right? There's Congress involved, there's the executive branch involved. It's not like these things are skirting the rule of law. It's just that, you know, the legislative branch has not entered itself into these things previously, or, you know, it did under the Chevron ruling and then set a precedent that has been there for a long time.
Yeah, like, I mean, exactly as you said, what really is the role of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration if not to issue rulings on how to keep workers safe in their workplaces? Like, I don't really know what they would be doing if not exactly this, like keeping them safe from extreme heat. Because, like, what else is the point of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and to your point with global warming, I think it's a topic that we'll probably discuss more on this show.
Yeah.
People will remember a few years ago, during like hurricane and tornado season, when there were a bunch of Amazon warehouses that again are built kind of paper thin walls, people are being trapped in there, told not to leave. This stuff is all connected, right? Whether it's heat or extreme weather, this is common for people who especially aren't remote and boots on the ground.
Yeah, because like, all right, sure, you have this one ruling saying that, you know, overturning the heat protection, but there are plenty of other extreme environmental things that could happen. And that, you know, there could be official regulations passed that were then not enforceable, you know, specifically like if we're looking at extreme floods or extreme cold, any of that stuff. There, you know, this is a precedent that could make it so that you as a worker have no protections against, you know, acts of nature that are certain to increase over the next, you know, century.
Yeah.
So we're going to take just a quick break here, and we'll get right back to this topic in a second. But if you're just tuning in, you are listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll get right back to our discussion about the recent Supreme Court decisions and their effects on workers in a second. But I just want to drop a quick reminder to please consider donating to KBOO now and help us remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community. Donate today at kboo.fm/give or by mailing your donation to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you so much for supporting Community Powered Radio. And now we'll get back to our discussion here. So yeah, we were just talking about,
basically SCOTUS's kind of series here of just very pro-corporate, pro-capitalist moves that are essentially attacking years, hundreds of years of precedent of worker protection, their rights, and things that people have fought their entire lives and careers for, being overturned in basically a series of months and weeks.
Yeah, like being basically effectively overturned in one afternoon last week, or, you know, a few weeks ago, which is insane. But, you know, the Supreme, there's another example here of a ruling that was just handed down a couple weeks ago. The Supreme Court's decision on SEC versus Jarchese is another ruling that could end up having an impact on the National Labor Relations Board. The case challenged the Securities and Exchange Commission's practice of using administrative law judges to decide legal disputes. And, you know, supported by prominent billionaires like Elon Musk and Mark Cuban, the case argued that the SEC has too much power, which seems insane if we've, you know, anyone who lived through the 2008 crash.
Yeah.
It seems like a crazy statement. But in a 6-3 decision, the court ruled that defendants are entitled to a jury trial rather than having an administrative law judge decide the dispute. So this decision is now likely to raise questions about the constitutionality of the National Labor Relations Board's actions, as administrative law judges for the SEC and the NLRB have the same authority, essentially. I mean, yeah, like that is the way that the NLRB is able to adjudicate things. You know, it's not like a trial. They just have an administrative law judge hear the case and then make a ruling on it. And so if this is able to, you know, if this is the new precedent, that means that they will then have defendant trials, and that, you know, those things are always going to favor the corporation or the billionaire that has way more money to pay fancy law firms like Little or Mendelsohn, and, you know, versus a union or an individual worker. So, you know, as Ian Millhiser wrote for Vox, quote, "A wide array of laws guaranteeing workplace safety and advancing other important federal goals could cease to function after this ruling," end quote. So yeah, this one, I mean, they all of these new rulings handed down seem pretty detrimental, you know, pretty scary for worker protections. But this one definitely seems like it might do the most to just fully defang any ability of the NLRB or other such agencies to enforce the rulings that they hand down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we've been covering this and how basically this continues to be, you know, this court, the Roberts Court, continues to fall down, you know, come down on the side of the billionaire class and their interests, you know, across the board, regardless of what the situation is. And, you know, that's no surprise considering that a 2022 study found that of the 57 justices who have sat on the court over the past century, the six justices with the most pro-business voting records are the six members of today's 6-3 right-wing supermajority, all of whom were appointed by Republican presidents. That includes Justice Alito, Thomas, Roberts, the Chief Justice, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. The study found that Donald Trump's three appointees, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett, were the three most pro-business justices of the 57 evaluated, which, as we discussed earlier, means most pro-capitalist justices of all of the justices who have sat on the Supreme Court in American history. And the study also found that the court's Democratic appointees at the time, so, you know, 2 years ago, which were Kagan, Sotomayor, and Stephen Breyer, were among the top 20 most pro-business justices of all time. So that just sort of shows you where we are, you know, where the Overton window is in terms of our justice system right now. And so all of this is really a far cry from when justices were true champions of workers. You know, Arthur Goldberg had been the general counsel for the United Steelworkers and served as a Secretary of Labor under John F. Kennedy before being appointed to the Supreme Court. Justice William Brennan Jr., whose father was a union official, was famous for going to bat for workers prior to being, you know, appointed to the court. And as a lawyer, Justice Louis Brandeis, or, you know, prior to being a justice, Louis Brandeis filed famous, detailed Supreme Court briefs in cases that sought to uphold pro-worker laws. And then he was then later appointed to the Supreme Court. So, you know, it is, it's no surprise to anyone listening, likely, that the Supreme Court's approval ratings have fallen to a record low over the last couple of years. And, you know, many Americans, rightfully, I think, see the court as being completely corrupt and, you know, kind of beyond repair at this point. And, it, you know, have lost faith in its ability to adjudicate for us. You know, it's, as we discussed earlier, the justices take all expenses paid vacations with billionaires. They fail to disclose gifts. They ignore blatant conflicts of interest. And, you know, in a recent story that just came out, one justice's home hung an upside-down flag apparently showing sympathy for Trump's Stop the Steal movement. And so that, you know, it is, it's a far cry from when the court was believed to be non-political. So, you know, the obvious way to begin to solve this crisis, aside from, you know, something like court packing or impeaching, you know, members of the court or something like that, and to, you know, try to regain some respect and popularity would be for them to stop ruling so often in favor of these multi-billion dollar corporations and instead start to side with labor unions and workers and institutions that fight to improve the lives of average Americans. You know, even just one out of every five rulings, if they could maybe try and side with workers at some point.
Yeah, I think, you know, Donald Trump's presidency, while it feels like a long time ago in the rearview mirror, one of the things that made me most proud as an American was the fact that he was not able to do all of the things that he wanted and that our institutions were strong, right? And I think it made me kind of remember and understand that how America is about more than just like a single person in this role, right? There are checks and balances, there are these things. And honestly, I felt so proud thinking about those things back to myself as we were getting ready for the show. And to see the thing that made me so proud just a few years ago be kind of slowly torn down is a very painful experience. And I think people need to remember what it's all about. And it's all about, even if you get your guy, they don't get to do everything that they want, right? Even if your guy is the person pushing for the, right? If it swung the other way, right? The institutions keep things in the middle. It keeps things kind of moving in a way, right? People's opinions, 50% of people probably disagree with you, right? Yeah. And so, you know, just to close it out, institutions being weakened is just something that I think both sides don't really actually want.
Yeah, like it is like clearly what the objective, at least at this point, of the right wing is. But I do think that, you know, it's kind of like the dog that catches the car. You mm-hmm. know, you don't necessarily know what to do once you get that, and you might not realize the long-term consequences. So unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We will certainly keep up with the story as it develops. But thank you so much for listening. This has been Labor Radio, and I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gillen.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Before we get started, I want to remind you that KBOO is a